Good morning. This is Focus 580 on WILL AM, AM 580. I'm John Paul, sitting in today for David Inge. And I want to pose a question to you today and invite you to participate in the answer and our conversation with our guest today. Now, suppose you took part in a significant historic American event, and suppose they took pictures of you at that big historic event. But when they developed the pictures and printed them, you'd been cut out of the photo. Now, how would it make you feel? Well, that is the entire premise for a nonfiction book by Gail Buckley called American Patriots, The History of Blacks in the Military, and about the part that she believes that was erased in history for many American blacks from the Revolutionary War all the way through Desert Storm. Now, I'm anxious to hear today, especially from veterans, but anyone else who wants to join in our conversation with Gail Buckley, we invite you to join in by picking up your telephone. The telephone number to join in our conversation in the Champaign-Urbana area is 217, of course, 333-WILL. That's 333-9455. And outside the Champaign-Urbana area, really anywhere within the WILL listening area, you can call toll-free at 800-222-WILL, 800-222-9455. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine. Thank you very much for having me on your program.
Well, your book is very exciting, and it traces a part of history that I think many of us didn't get a chance to read about in most of the history books we read in school.
Right.
Tell me, I mean, I read that American history is full of heroes, and for a long time it seemed that none of us saw the black side of the story.
Well, in the 18th and 19th century, it was known that there were blacks at Bunker Hill, at Valley Forge, in the Civil War, all the great moments of American history at that period. It was known of the black participation. In fact, there were black historians who wrote about it. By the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, all of that history had been erased from the textbooks, which were rewritten to establish the principle of Southern revisionism, which was the idea that black soldiers had to be erased from history to promulgate the myth of the happy slave. And this was a concerted effort on the part of historians and writers and authors. W.E.B. Du Bois called it one of the worst examples of denigrating a people known in history. And this is why most people who grew up in the 20th century, and especially in the first 60, who read textbooks from the first 50 or 60 years of the 20th century, had no idea that there were blacks at every important moment, for example, at Lexington and Concord and Bunker Hill.
So at exactly what point, then, did Americans begin to realize the role of blacks in the military?
I mean, I think it happened in the late to mid 1960s and early 1970s, when finally an appreciation after the civil rights movement and during the civil rights movement, a new appreciation of black history came about. And it turns out that it isn't really black history; it's completed American history, because it's a part of American history which, for political reasons, became unknown. But it was always there.
Gail, what was your inspiration to get involved in a project like this, to write a book like this in detail, part of untold history?
Well, it was a family inspiration. I had written an earlier book called The Horns about my family and leading up to my mother, Lena Horn, but specifically to the earlier generations. And in those earlier generations, I kept coming across soldiers. And one in particular in World War I really interested me. And the problem was, in the book that I was writing then, I had no room for these were sort of distant cousins and minor and uncles and minor family members who really were sort of walk-on characters in this other book that I was writing. But one person in particular sort of struck me in a romantic way. It was a great uncle, a photograph of a great uncle in a World War I uniform. He was a very young man, and he had just married, and he had never come back from World War One. And I was interested in his history, having also discovered that he had been in the 24th Infantry, who had pursued Pancho Villa in 1916 after his Pancho Villa's raid on Columbus, New Mexico. And I sort of wanted to know, I was inspired to sort of want to know what were the experiences of black men in the military in those days. I had no idea. And when I began to study, when I began to research the subject, I was just bowled over by the information. I mean, we're in a period now of rediscovering past heroes. And here are all these amazing heroes that no one knew about, it seemed to me. Beginning with the Revolution, going through the Civil War of 1812, the Civil War, the Indian Wars, the Spanish-American War, the Philippine Insurrection. Always there were black soldiers there, and always they were there at important moments, at great moments, and had done valiant deeds, winning medals of honor as soon as they were established. And I sort of I thought, why is this history unknown? And then I discovered, reading, particularly there's a wonderful book by Frances Fitzgerald called America Revised, where she describes the whole process of Southern revisionism, which actually began with the election of 1876, in which, after the Civil War, black troops were removed from the South, and the Democratic Party could reestablish its power in the South, and the Republicans could keep the White House. It was a contested election, if you remember, in 1876, the Hayes-Tilden election. And in the compromise that followed, Republicans kept the White House, but Democrats once again controlled their own destinies in the South, which they had lost after the Civil War. And blacks were then once again at the mercy of the Southern whites. And all black rights that had been won by the civil rights laws of the earlier 1870s were destroyed, and blacks were once again slowly put into a kind of de facto slavery, which became sharecropping. And Jim Crow laws were established. Ultimately, with Plessy versus Ferguson in 1891, the white supremacy idea and attitude became the law of the South.
Those early years of military history have to be quite a challenge for blacks in America, especially in light of slavery and the abolition movement, really beginning all the way back prior to the Revolutionary War.
Absolutely.
And how did that affect, the soldier, the service personnel who were fighting in the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812?
Yes. It's interesting because the country looked at, there were... after the Revolution, for example, actually the war itself was completely integrated. Black troops were one-fifth of the Revolutionary Army. George Washington called his army a mixed multitude. I had no idea that the ranks were completely integrated in the Revolution. And at the end of the war, there was a great feeling, because of the Revolution, there was a great feeling of, in the Upper South especially, that emancipation was possible. And many people, many slave owners in the Upper South, were beginning to liberate their slaves on revolutionary principles, as according to the idea that slavery was against the idea of the rights of man, against the idea of liberty and freedom that they had all fought for. Now, blacks were fighting in the Revolution, especially in the North. They fought less in the South because most slave owners were loath to let their slaves go free to fight, whereas in the North, free blacks fought and slaves fought as substitutes for their masters on the promise of freedom, which they didn't always get. But the whole idea was that they were fighting for their freedom for their country and freedom for themselves and freedom for other black people in America. In 1800, for example, blacks were 18% of the population. The vast majority, of course, were slaves. But it was a huge black population in the country that certainly heard the message of freedom that came with the Revolution. So they were very eager to fight this war. And things, in fact, went very well for blacks in America after the Revolution for a period. Once again, there was one factor, and it was an economic factor. In 1791, the cotton gin was invented. And this established slavery as a viable an important and vastly important economic proposition in America for the next, 150 years or so. So you had this condition that then made both abolitionism much more important and the idea of escape much more important, because the same year that the cotton gin was invented, Canada abolished slavery. So you had a place to run away to. And these were the great years of the Underground Railroad and the fugitive slave movement and the rise of abolitionism. And also at the same time that the rise of abolitionism was happening, and abolitionism was strengthening, just as slavery, of course, was intense and the Cotton Kingdom was ruled the world, you also had what was called the Free Soil Movement. So there were sort of many factors were coming together to end slavery finally, or to be against slavery, which, of course, finally happened with the Civil War.
I want to remind our listeners this morning, Gail, that we're visiting with Gail Buckley, the author of a book called American Patriots, The Story of Blacks in the U.S. Military, published by Random House. And we invite your calls and questions and comments for Ms. Buckley at 333-9455. That's in the Champaign-Urbana area. And outside the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free anywhere in Illinois and Indiana, at 800-222-WILL, 800-222-9455. Gail, as you look at U.S. military history in your book, how would you characterize the best of times and the worst of times for black service personnel?
It's interesting because it sort of goes, there are sort of three periods. The best of times obviously came after the integration of the Army in 1948. And I would say the best of times probably came in the beginning of Vietnam and in Desert Storm. But there was a very, in a strange way, the worst of times are very clear. The worst of times are the first half of the 20th century. World War One and World War Two were specifically the worst times to be a black American in the military.
How so? Give me some examples of how blacks were either discriminated or the racism that existed
right.
in the military.
Well, in World War One, for example, Woodrow Wilson was the first Southern Democratic president since the Civil War. When he came to Washington, he resegregated the federal government and Washington, D.C., which had been desegregated since the Civil War. He would not allow black combat troops to fight under the American flag. Black combat troops in World War One all fought with the French army, with French weapons, and in French uniforms. Incidentally, they were the most highly decorated and longest-serving American troops in World War One. Black troops at home in World War One, for example, at Camp Lee, Virginia, which was Wilson's home state, in the terrible winter of 1918, some black troops froze to death because they were forced to sleep on the ground in pup tents, while white troops slept in barracks. On troop ships, blacks were kept below sea level in U-boat-infested waters, and often denied lifeboat equipment. They were expected to use floating debris in case of attack, a fact that absolutely appalled future General George C. Marshall. And black troops alone were left behind to rebury the dead after World War One. This practice continued in World War Two, and in World War Two, the racism was perhaps even worse because there was no opportunity to serve with a foreign government, which treated them as heroes. In World War Two, for example, my own mother, who sang and entertained troops, went to Camp Roberts in Arkansas in 1944 to entertain black troops, and she saw several rows of people who she presumed to be white soldiers sitting in the front, and she didn't realize that there were white soldiers at the camp. And she said, "And who are these white soldiers?" And she was told, "These aren't soldiers. These are German prisoners of war." Now, the German prisoners of war were placed in the audience in front of the black GIs. She refused to sing at this camp, and she was kicked out of the USO for refusing to sing. But this was the kind of thing that black Americans had to put up with in both of those the two major wars of the 20th century.
I also read in 1941 the military issued an order regarding white blood only for white soldiers?
Yes, this was not a Red Cross practice. This was a military practice. And interestingly enough, the man who invented blood plasma was black. So he would not, his blood not, would not even have been eligible for white troops at that period.
Now, as you look at culture today and in the last 25 years, it seems as though movies are beginning to include more African Americans in their, you know, for example, in the current movie that's out, Pearl Harbor, we do see Dory Miller's role in the battle at Pearl Harbor, and a few years ago, Glory detailed that Black Civil War unit from Massachusetts. But in general, those war movies in the John Wayne era did not have a lot of blacks in them.
They had no blacks in the John Wayne era. I think the first movie that really depicted blacks in wartime, aside from one of the great documentaries, Frank Capra documentary called The Negro Soldier in World War II, which was a propaganda film. For the first depiction of blacks in the military was Glory. Before that, actually, Thomas Edison had shot black troops going to the Philippine insurrection in 1899, and at that period, blacks were still recognized heroes in the American scene. But I think it took until Glory. For the, I think that was probably the first movie where it happened. And that was 1980s. It was a very long time. But I think it's getting better now. I think there's probably going to be more a breakthrough. I mean, Glory was the first breakthrough. It was a wonderful movie. And I haven't seen Pearl Harbor, but the Dory Miller story is certainly important. He was the first hero, the first American hero of Pearl Harbor. On December 7th, 1941, he was a messman on the West Virginia. And in those days, the only rank that a black person could hold in the Navy was as a messman or a steward. And he and they were not permitted to use weapons and were not taught to use weapons. But when the ship was struck, first he carried the wounded captain to safety. Then he manned a gun and brought down three Japanese planes. Now, the Navy was initially embarrassed that their first hero was black, and they called him an unidentified messman. But after black protests, he was identified and finally became the first black American to win the Navy Cross. But for a long time, the official first hero of Pearl Harbor was Captain Colin Kelly, who on December 9th, rather than December 7th, as Dory Miller had done, had bravely, I think, crashed his plane into a Japanese ship, and he became Colin Powell's boyhood hero.
Gail, we have a caller from Chicago who wants to talk to you. Welcome to Focus 580.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I didn't know Colin Kelly was black. I thought he was an Irishman or something.
Oh, he was white.
Oh, okay.
No, he became the first official hero.
I didn't think he was a black guy. Yeah, I've heard of him.
He wasn't.
As a matter of fact, didn't some of his officers recommend him for the Congressional Medal of Honor?
Colin Kelly or
Dory Miller?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but he never got it.
No, he never got it. He got the Navy Cross.
He was killed 2 years later, but he never got it.
Yes.
Listen, I wonder if you could tell us about the Port Chicago incident. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I do. That was, I think that was 1943 or 1944. It was the worst.
It was July 19th, 1944.
It was the worst. Pardon me?
I believe it was July 17th, 44, wasn't it?
Yes, you clearly know the date better than I do. I have so many facts in my head, I sometimes lose dates. But it was the worst domestic disaster of World War II. It involved loading ammunition. All the Navy ammunition loaders were black. As Thurgood Marshall, I'll tell the story. There was a terrible explosion. Nearly 300 sailors were killed, most of them black ammunition loaders.
I believe it was 320, and 202 of them were black.
Well, you obviously know this very well, so maybe you could tell us.
The thing of it is, some of the white officers used to bet which crew could load faster. I bet you my group of colored boys can load faster than your group, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the chief, I don't know what you call him, but the guy who was in charge of the crew, would go down and say, the losers do not get liberty this weekend.
Right.
And so then that would start they would say, come on, we ain't got all day. You black boys got to hurry it up. We ain't got all day.
Exactly.
And they would load these ships. And I believe it was finally one night the E.A. Bryant blew up.
Yes.
And
And then the survivors refused to return to work.
That's right.
And they were accused of mutiny. And Thurgood Marshall was their lawyer, and he said, blacks aren't asking why they have to load ammunition. They're just asking why they're the only people in the Navy who have to load ammunition.
That's right, and I believe 250 refused, and about 50, eventually 200 went back, and about 50 were court-martialed.
Court-martialed and accused of treason.
Right.
Now, I think the... in the end, they did not serve long prison terms, but they were not, and they were honorably discharged from the Navy. But still, this treason crime was left on their records.
Yeah, you still have that charge hanging over you.
Yes, and the last man to survive, the last survivor, was pardoned by President Clinton.
Yeah, I don't think people realize it, but that nearly happened to Jackie Robinson. He almost happened to him.
Right. It was a different situation.
Yeah, but he came very close to that. And if it had...
Very close, right.
He would never have been the first black man to go into baseball.
Exactly. He was an officer. I think he was a lieutenant.
That's right. He was riding next
on
to
a bus.
A white-skinned white woman.
And it wasn't a white woman. It was a black woman who looked white, who was the wife of another black officer, and he was sitting next to her.
She looked light enough to pass for white.
Exactly. I think she looked probably like a white person.
Yeah, and the bus driver yelled at him to go to the back of the bus.
Yes, and there was a huge contretemps of why he was sitting next to a white person, and she was not a white person.
I'll make one more comment, and then I'll get off and let someone else on. But this institutionalized segregation actually started with Lincoln. When he created these units, he thought that blacks could not perform well by themselves, so he put in black troops, but he gave them white officers.
It was a War Department decision, and it was because of the Southern mindset of the military, for sure. But, for example, there was no feeling of that regard in
1863 or whatever it was.
In the Revolution, there was no sense of that feeling. In the War of 1812, there was no sense of that feeling.
That's right, yeah.
So it was a 19th century.
Yeah, a lot of people of color served in Washington's army, by the way. You didn't have an army.
Pardon me?
A lot of people of color served in George Washington's army.
This is the Revolutionary Army.
Yeah, you didn't have an army like that until Korea again.
Pardon me?
You didn't have another army that integrated until the Korean War.
No, and it was only halfway through the Korean War. Actually, Vietnam was the second war since the Revolution to begin totally integrated. So it was a very, very long time.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well,
thanks for your call this morning again. We invite your calls. We have Gail Buckley with us today, an author of American Patriots, the story of blacks in the U.S. military, published by Random House. You can find it, I'm sure, on the web if you're looking for it that way, or you can find it at your local bookstore. We do have another caller, and again, we invite your calls to participate in the conversation with Gail Buckley today in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, and elsewhere in Illinois and in Indiana at 800-222-9455. Of course, those last four digits, WILL. We have a caller on line one from Champaign. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, Gail.
Hi.
This history that you're writing about has always made me wince when I've heard about how men have been treated when they come back from wars. I was wondering kind of two things. If you thought that there was some kind of a missed opportunity on the part of pro-equality whites and blacks over the years and not getting the stories out of what happened in these wars and how blacks carried themselves with equal if not more valor and if these stories had been told perhaps like even the staunchest racist might have felt differently. I mean, I'm an engineer, so I always am looking at how to undo something in maybe overly simple terms,
right.
but do you think things could have been anyway, so that question is clear.
I think so. I agree with you for sure that if more people had known about this, I mean, everybody who showed up, white, black, or whatever, was a hero for showing up in any war, for volunteering or for being drafted. If you were there, you were a hero, no matter what happened. I mean, the conditions of wartime are such that
Right.
You are sacrificing. You have to sacrifice something to join the to be in the military. You have sacrificed something in wartime, and certainly there were people who knew these stories. But it was institutionalized. It was cultural. The racism was pervasive. And it could have been benign racism in the sense that people were not overtly racist. And if you were not overtly racist, you also just didn't talk about it. And if you were overtly racist, you did not want any symptoms, any idea of black valor to be perpetuated. So it was always a problem because of the institutionalized racism of the country, which I think is less and less. So now these stories are coming out more and more. And even though, for example, there was institutionalized racism in the 19th century, mm-hmm. It was less. In fact, for example, when the Indian Wars were fought, when the Spanish-American Wars were fought, this was still in the there was a kind of post-Reconstruction era of good feeling as far as blacks were concerned. And blacks had many civil rights, which were done away with by the end of the 19th century. So you had this period in the, which actually John Paul had asked earlier, which were the good times. You had this period from sort of 1866 to 1890-something, 1889 or 90, even 1898, where you had a sense of Americans knew about black military heroes, and there was no problem with that. But when it became a political issue, when it became a matter of Southern Democrats being returned to power, in this period, incidentally, they were all Republican presidents. In this later, in the early 20th century, end of the 19th century, when you have the Southern Democrats returning to power, then there was a change in the attitude, which was very important to erase all black valor. So there was always a purpose in these stories not getting out. It was not just, oh, well, they didn't happen to be told. There was a purpose behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the problem, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And now there is an attitude, of course, the whole country, the attitude of the country is different. We have destroyed institutionalized racism. There are no more Jim Crow laws. So we are now in a period, finally, when we are able to rediscover Dorie Miller. I'm sure there'll be other stories which will be put in the movies. I mean, there's so many stories in my book of these amazing people from every war, from the 18th through the 20th century, that I'm sure that people will discover these stories and say, oh my goodness, we should know these.
Some of those people you mention in your book are books themselves, probably.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Well, thank you very much for calling.
I have one more question.
Oh, yeah.
Regards to the Denzel Washington character in Glory, I was wondering if you thought that was kind of a symbolic character to represent, like, the hopes of the black man that they
absolutely
might have a chance.
Absolutely.
To if there were actually troops who really, in an individual basis, felt like he did.
Well, in Glory, he was a composite character for sure. The true facts of the Glory, 54th Massachusetts, most of the characters were Northerners. Most of the true people in the 54th Massachusetts came from the North, and they had been free all the time. Mm-hmm. So there were very few runaway slaves in that regiment, if any, in fact.
Oh.
And they were mainly from all over the North.
Oh.
And, for example, the two sons of Frederick Douglass were sergeant and sergeant major of the regiment. This was not portrayed in the movie.
Mm.
The two younger brothers of William and Henry James, the great philosopher and great novelist of the 19th century, were young officers in the regiment. This was not portrayed in the movie. It was definitely an abolitionist regiment, even though leaders of the regiment itself had tried to get black officers, but the War Department would not allow black officers except for a black chaplain. And but by the end of the war, there were battlefield commissions, and some of the sergeants became officers. But it was very much the spirit of the movie Glory was true to the regiment, but the facts were not particularly true.
I see.
I hope that's answered your question.
Thank you very much.
Right, thanks for your call. Let's move along. We do have several callers waiting. Line 2, a caller in Elliott. Go ahead with Gail Buckley.
Yes, the name of World War hero Colin Kelly was mentioned. Reminded me that a former principal at Champaign Central High School, Clint Kelly, was a brother of Colin Kelly.
Oh, really? Yes, Colin Kelly was a white hero. On December 9th, he was a great hero in World War II. And I mentioned him because he was Colin Powell's boyhood hero, which is why Colin Powell pronounced his name Colin rather than Colin.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, I believe there was also a popular war song written at that time. It had Colin Kelly's name in it. And I can't remember it. I wondered if a listener could identify the title or give some of the words.
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure there was.
Not anything your mother sang.
Hero, but not the first real hero of World War II.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have another caller, this one on line 4 from Champaign County. Go ahead, caller. You're on with Gail Buckley.
Hello?
Hello.
I have 3 points, and I'll have to hang up. Two of them are kind of germane, and one of them's a response to a turn of phrase you used, but... I think you sort of started talking about the Buffalo Soldiers, which would be the African-American troops who were. But isn't it also the case that they were used in 1898 and they actually took San Juan Hill and allowed the Rough Riders to just sort of ride up there?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then more contemporary, you haven't talked much about the Gulf War, but my understanding is that, you know, obviously people aren't freezing to death, and they wouldn't, I guess, in the desert, but they might die of exposure. But there was still a lot going on there. I don't know if you've heard about these tapes from Chicago radio stations.
Yes, I have heard about those, in point of fact.
Listen to those. I actually have only had them characterized. So.
Yes, I've heard about them, that there were American Muslims were discriminated against. They felt discriminated against.
Well, what I've heard is that the white troops in the Gulf were calling the Arabs sand niggers and expecting their comrades who are African American to sort of go along with this kind of racism.
Yes, yes, I've heard that too.
It wasn't just anti-American Muslim either, I think. There were a lot of dimensions that were explored on these call-ins that have never, I think, really been...
Right. Yes, no, absolutely. I think that was an element for sure. I don't think it was a large element or a major element in the Gulf. I really have to say that. I think that in the Gulf, despite these pockets, and I think that they were there for sure, because there is always going to be racism anywhere you go. And it depends whether it is encouraged by the powers who are the people who are in control or discouraged.
Or acquiesced in or something, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes there's acquiescence in it.
Acquiescence, but I think in this case, I think it was a smaller percentage than really what was going on.
Well, yeah, I guess qualitatively it's got to be less bad than in the past.
Oh, absolutely, because you have in the Gulf War, you have not only you have Colin Powell, who's chairman of the Joint Chiefs, you have General Calvin Waller, second in command to General Schwarzkopf. You have the first American to shoot down a Scud missile over Riyadh as a black woman. So you have, it's come full circle. The whole sort of entrenched military racism no longer exists.
Well, I think there's another myth there that's not related to this topic, but not that many Scuds were really shot down by Patriots. That's also another...
Right, the Patriots were shown to be not that effective.
At all. Well, the other point that you said that everyone who goes to a war is brave, and it just elicited me and my... 68 sensibility that there are a lot of people that didn't go to Vietnam who were brave.
Equally brave. No, I agree with you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for your call. Again, we invite your calls here at WILL. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, 800-222-9455, toll-free around Illinois and Indiana. We have plenty of callers that want to speak to you, Gail, this morning about your book about the story of blacks in the U.S. military. Let's check in with a caller on line 3 from Atlanta, Illinois.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great conversation. While I was dialing the phone, maybe somebody mentioned, back to the movies, maybe somebody mentioned this movie, but one of the most compelling stories, I think, of recent times is about the Navy deep sea diver, I think.
Oh, yes. I haven't seen that movie. I hear it's wonderful.
Point of Honor, I think, was the name of it. I'm not sure, but I know it was for sure my wife's favorite movie of the year and close to mine in mainstream movies, and it was what a great, great story.
Yes, everyone is, as I must say, I confess I have not had time to see it, and I look forward to seeing it, but everyone has good words about it.
Well, I'm sure there's, like you alluded to before, there's probably thousands of stories like that out there, and I hope we get to hear more of them, and thanks for your book.
Oh, thank you for your call.
Bye.
Yeah, thank you for your call. Let's move on to another caller on line one in Champaign.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
If I remember right, the first man killed in the Revolutionary War was a black man.
Well, yes, he was killed in the Boston Massacre, actually. So he was the first martyr of the Revolution, Crispus Attucks, and he was a rallying cry for all the revolutionary people after that. Hancock and Jefferson said that the Tree of Liberty is nourished with the blood of Attucks, and Hancock said this was the first man who dared to look the British in the eye, and he was one of the seven or six victims of the Boston Massacre and the first American to be killed.
Thank you.
Okay, let me move quickly to someone on a car phone on line three. Hello, you're on with Gail Buckley.
Yeah, I've been looking at some of the homeschooling method. I've seen a reasonably large movement on the homeschooling method to use history books from before 1950 because of the revisionist problem. And so from the sound of it, what we're really going to be doing is doing a real disservice to the kids that we homeschool if we do that.
They're using history books written before 1950?
Yes. Specifically to avoid the revisionists.
Well,
they call the revisionism.
They're totally in the middle of revisionism. If they use history books before 1950, they will never learn about a black in the military. They will never learn about American Indians in the military. They will never learn any of what I've written about. And that, I think, is a tragedy. Why is that a specific... I mean, why would they want to use...
Because of the revisionists, the feminists.
Oh, they don't want to have any of that material come out. Is that it?
Uh-huh.
That is very strange. That is very disappointing and sad.
I don't know how big it is. I've just heard
totally,
of it.
I mean, it's just it's horrifying. If they're going to teach, that's like teaching history that isn't even honest, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's too bad.
Thank you.
Are you involved in the homeschooling movement?
I was going to, but I decided not to.
Because I think, that's an appalling discovery.
I mean, and if I was going to, I would be using modern textbooks.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really unbelievable. But I'm very sorry to hear it, and I hope that anybody who's listening will realize that this is not that they are teaching. If they're going to teach their used pre-1950 textbooks to teach their children American history, they're doing a disservice to their children, their country, and to the facts.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call this morning. Again, we are on with Gail Buckley, the author of American Patriots, the story of blacks in the U.S. military. I'm John Paul, sitting in today and on Friday for David Inge on Focus 580. And we have a caller for you, Gail, from Greenfield, Indiana, on line two. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ms. Buckley and John Paul. I apologize for not getting your name. The name of the song that someone mentioned had Calling Holly in it is There's a Star-Spangled Banner Waving Somewhere.
Great.
So I won't keep you.
Thank you.
I sure love y'all's program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in and checking in today. Another caller today. This one on line four, a caller from Monticello. Go ahead. You're on with Gail Buckley.
Thank you, Ms. Buckley. Are you in Champaign-Urbana now?
No, I'm in New York City.
Well, then this doesn't apply. There is a exhibit of African-American women's quilts in the local museum, and I'm sure a lot of the quilts were from the period of the Civil War when quilts were used as pathfinders.
Yes, it sounds
I'm sorry you can't see it.
I'm sorry, too, but maybe I can get there and it'll still be there, hopefully.
Until September, let me see when it
is. Well, it sounds 30th, wonderful.
September 30th.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for calling Focus 580 this morning. Gail, what about the accusations of that blacks in society, and for that matter in the military, suffered from a natural coward stereotype through many of those years?
Oh, well, that's part of the Southern revisionism. I mean, how can you say that blacks were naturally cowards suddenly at the end of the 19th century when they had fought in all these other wars, when they'd fought in the Revolution, when they'd fought in the Civil War, they'd fought in the War of 1812, not cowardly at all, when they had fought in the Spanish-American War. And each of these wars picked out for their specific lack of cowardice. So that's just nonsense, and that's racist propaganda.
Let's
part of the idea of the happy slave. I mean, I don't remember the name of the Southern general who said if blacks could be soldiers, then the whole idea of slavery is wrong. So it was very important for the Southern mindset to say that blacks are naturally cowards, and that's just ludicrous. Nobody's naturally a coward. I might naturally be a coward, but I don't think that people are, it's ridiculous. Some people might be cowards and some people are not, but you can't say that a whole race are cowards.
Okay, let's check in with a caller from Champaign on line one. Go ahead.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
I just had to call back to say that the woman that talked about the homeschooling, that is not necessarily so.
Oh, good.
I know several teachers that are homeschooling their kids.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
They're history books from modern history books in a lot of different places. I know because I happen to be a history book and a history buff, and I buy history books all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I have quite a collection. And I'm constantly taking them over and sharing them for their kids.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'd be happy to send you my book to share with some of your...
And a lot of them have things that you usually don't find in the old history books.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's very unfair to the children to give them outdated history books. I really do.
Oh, I do, too. There's one thing I'd like to say. I wish you'd write a book on all the different colored people and their accomplishments.
Well,
scientists and all that.
Yes.
There isn't any book like that now, is there?
Well, there are, actually. You just have to sort of find them. I would love to, if you want to send to John Paul your name and address and he could forward it to me, I could give you a list of wonderful books.
Oh, okay.
I'd be glad to help you out with that.
Because I'm sure there are. And also, if you go to your local public library, there are books. They're just sort of hard to find, but I know they exist because I use them in my own research.
It'd be nice to have a book, that would, just one book that would...
Yes, yes, and I'm sure there is one, and I'm sure, my book, for example, is partly what you're looking for, but there are many books, because my book, even though it's about military history, I talk very much about the culture of the times of each war, so that you get a sense of what American society was like, what was happening in politics and in culture at the same time that that wars were going on and the black participation in all aspects of it. So that's partly what you're looking for, but I know there are wonderful books out there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling Focus 580. We do have another caller this morning on line 3 from Urbana. Go ahead.
Hello. I've been enjoying the conversation. This is really, really great, and I look forward to reading your book. But I have a related question, and that is that during the Gulf War, there was a lot of conversation about the very large numbers of African-Americans in the military.
Yes.
As though the black people had suddenly become the soldiers for the whole country. You know what I mean? And so I was a little bit concerned and wanted to know your views on that.
Yes.
It seems to be... there's some question about the education level and the fact that some people who were going into the military were, say, poor students in school, almost like the military becomes a substitute for other occupations, and there was a lot of negative.
Well, actually, interestingly enough, the military at the time of the Gulf War was all volunteer, and for the first, and the educational level of the soldiers in that war was higher that it had ever been in any war in American history.
Okay.
Not only was it higher, but, for example, they smoked and drank less, they were more religious, they were more married, they had an incredible, it was a whole new army. I mean, there were obviously more women, more minorities. The problem was, I think, that for many blacks, the military became a place of opportunity to a far greater degree than it was for their white compatriots, because there were more opportunities to progress and develop in the military for blacks. Blacks seemed to feel that in the military than in civilian life. Mm-hmm. So this is why there was a sense that there was a preponderance of blacks going. And many people were feeling that the best young blacks in society were joining the military and that therefore their communities were losing them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it certainly is a place of opportunity
mm-hmm.
because the military made a concerted effort after Vietnam to become truly a place where you could be all you could be was the motto.
Yeah.
And where it became race and gender neutral,
mm-hmm.
really to the best of its ability, and I believe it did.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, caller. Gail, a couple of questions. One, mainly, as we wind down towards the end of the program here this morning, what about black women in the military?
Well, the black women in the military have progressed as white women in the military have progressed. And even, it's always been a difference with women. For example, in World War II, where you had the first black women in uniform, even then, in a totally segregated military, in World War II, all the women were trained together, black and white, which was not true with the men. The men had segregated training. So the women, black and white, have always been sort of more advanced in the racial issue. And I think that probably recently I've met some black women who are colonels and general. I mean, there is a whole sort of area where black women and white women are incredibly advanced in the military. And I don't think you can separate the two because I think that it's just a question of women being in high positions, and some of them are black, and some of them are white.
How would you characterize the U.S. military today at this moment in terms of the way its relationship is with the black Americans?
Well, I think in terms of the numbers, for example, I believe as of 2000, blacks were something like 14% of the population, and they were something like 26% of the military, 36% of enlisted military, 36% of higher NCOs, 12% of commissioned officers, and 8% of generals. So you have very high numbers. There were lower numbers, for example, in special forces and in the Air Force. But you have blacks believing and feeling that the military is a great place of opportunity and a great place, a great career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the military is very attractive to qualified black people.
Gail, thank you for your time this morning. We've been spending the last hour conversing with Gail Buckley about her book, American Patriots, the stories of blacks in the U.S. military. And there are dozens and dozens of stories from Crispus Attucks all the way through Colin Powell and his crash in Vietnam and his rise to power as a general in the U.S. military. Gail, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much for having me.
And again, we invite you to join us in the second hour this morning of Focus 580. Gasoline prices, you know, in Illinois are down, but the unemployment rate is up, the interest rate is lower. What's that all mean to you? Coming up just after 11 o'clock in Focus 580 this morning, a discussion about the Illinois economy. And we invite your calls to that.